This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to Finding Hope on the EWN Radio Network with Counselor Mandy Epley, where you will learn practical tools for navigating your losses and hear inspiring real-life stories from courageous people who have moved through their losses and found hope. And now, your host, Counselor Mandy.
Welcome to Finding Hope. I am your host, Counselor Mandy Bird, and I'm really excited today to have this powerful woman with us, Jill Angelo. Jill, thank you for being on Finding Hope today.
I am so excited to be here. Thank you.
Absolutely. And always I give a shout out to the producer of Finding Hope, the lovely Cindy Bolero. Hey, Cindy.
Hey there.
If you'll do the honors, will you introduce Jill Angelo to our listening friends?
I am happy to. Jill Angelo is author of Sacred Space, Turning Your Home into a Sanctuary. She has more than 25 years experience in business and operations management, an education in marketing and design, and a background in psychology and the mystical arts. Her fine-tuned abilities and out-of-the-box approach to life have uniquely prepared her for creating sacred spaces for people with wide-ranging interests and budgets. And we are so excited to have you here with us today, Jill.
Again, thank you so much.
So, Jill, as I shared with you, I love asking our guests this very powerful question on Finding Hope. And I think this question is so important because it, for all of our listening friends, for people that will listen to us live and will download and listen on demand, we all have incredible stories. We all have amazing things that have happened to us in our lives. And the thing that this show is all dedicated to, and what I am so passionate about, is helping people take their losses, their disappointments, their great heartbreaks, tragedies, whatever has happened in your life, and to find the great dignity, the great meaning, and the beauty within your losses. So we have had this incredible journey of interviewing leaders from all types of industry and all types of line of work and heart passions to hear their stories to inspire you. So as you're listening to Jill's story, friends, think about how you can apply her wisdom to your life. What can you extract from her story, from her wisdom, from her heart sharing that can help you find hope on your own journey? So, Jill, that question is, will you please share with us what has been one of the great heartbreaks in your life, and we'll explore together how that has led you towards your calling?
My greatest heartbreak thus far has been when I was in my late 20s and early 30s. You're unstoppable at that age and don't always have the right amount of wisdom, right? Slightly cocky, thought I knew what I was doing. As I say in my book, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. And so I had been dating at the time who was the love of my life, and he was somewhat of a badass. He was a rebel. He was in a rock band. He had long hair. He was tattooed. And, you know, that all kind of follows suit of coming from my background of being with a dad who was Chicago police and, you know, that kind of rebel type of way of being. My dad was a great good cop, so I want to note that. But it's just that kind of background that there's that attraction. And we were together for 5.5 years, and we decided that it was time to move to those next steps, which would have been settling down, getting married, having children. And this is where I told God what my plans were. So his mom was a twin, and twins usually skip generations. So I thought, well, I'm going to have twins for sure, and we're going to get married. And we bought this house that I had seen living in the neighborhood for years and always drove past it and knew that there was something about that house, but I didn't know what. And then it wound up that we wound up buying it, and we decided that we were going to rehab a great majority of it. So we finally get the house. It's effortless to get it. And we get in there and we're there 12 days. And he surprises me on day 12 and asks me to marry him. And of course I said yes. Because again, remember I told God my plans. And on day 13, we're getting ready to go to work. It was a Tuesday morning and he wasn't himself. And he was highly intuitive, but I really didn't know what intuition truly was at that age. I was 32. Mm. I didn't really know. I knew that it existed, but I didn't know necessarily how to trust it. I didn't have that guidance of people, places, things that taught me. You know, people would say, trust your gut. Okay, but I really didn't understand what that magnitude of intuition truly, truly is. Right. And so I asked him, I said, you know, what's wrong? And he's like, my nickname is Jill B, and he called me B. And he's like, you know, B, something's wrong. He goes, it's all too good. He goes, the other shoe is going to fall. Something's going to go wrong. And I'd been here with him before. And ironically enough, the reason why I told you it was Tuesday is because on Sunday, I was grocery shopping and he had had a dream that he woke up from and called me in a panic and said, you have to come home right now. I had the worst dream ever. And I said, what's wrong? And he goes, I had this dream that you died in a massive car accident. And so I stopped what I was doing. I rushed home to be with him. And now we're going to fast forward to Tuesday. So Tuesday, we both go about our days. I center him for work and he calls me at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm 35 miles away from him, from where he's at. And he left work early so he could go home now because in those 12 days, we had stripped a great deal of that house down to a foundation floor and studs because we're going to rehab this house.
Mm.
And about an hour and a half later, a police department and the nurse's station of a hospital called and told me that he had been in a very bad car accident and that I needed to get to the hospital as soon as I could, but I never thought that he would die. It wasn't even in my psyche. We're invincible at that age. Why would this happen to me at 32?
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time I kept calling the nurse's station while I was driving, and they're telling me he's in critical condition. And I'm reasoning with myself driving going, okay, you know what? We could get through this. If he's going to have to be hospital bound, we'll work around it. You know, whatever we have to do, we're going to do because he's going to be okay because I've got these plans.
Yeah.
And so I went running through the doors of the hospital and they were waiting for me. And I mean, priests, I mean, nurses, I mean, nuns. And then of course the police department. And all of a sudden, I come through the door, and it all became that surreal place that I'm sure that every single person who has experienced grief knows exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And the priest came up to me and said, I'm sorry. And my body gave out, and I was caught by two, I believe, to this day, angels, but I don't know who they were. And on went the new lifestyle and these changes, these massive changes of this overwhelming sense of grief for this life that I thought I was going to lead, that within 8 minutes of when I hung up with them, we found out later he was already dead.
Oh, Jesus. Wow. Wow. I know you've told your story many times, and I want to take a moment just to hold the sacred in each of our stories and the sacred in your story, Jill, and that, I mean, it just, you know, when I hear you, I mean, I have butterflies in my stomach and my heart's racing because these are moments that we don't ever anticipate in our lives. We don't ever anticipate them. And in the moment that those out-of-body kind of experiences happen that and shock sets in, we can never then imagine that we'd even ever be able to talk about it and let alone find incredible meaning in our losses. And I want to celebrate the journey that you've been on and just really on behalf of everyone that has suffered incredible losses to say that's what we have to do. We have to tell our stories to encourage each other. So you must have been just obliterated, just absolutely blown away.
As an understatement, yes.
More
difficult was my friends were all on their second, third child. I was the last one who was going to get married. that sense of 32 now, it's not really a biological clock, but at some point it is, because of course all my friends are having children, and you know, I wanted to have children, and then it was, now how do you deal, because my grief is palpable. My friends have all these beautiful jubilations in their lives, but they don't want to get overly close to that because it's too real.
Yeah.
So those initial stages of where grief is such a solitary experience, because who can console you? No one.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a developed sense relationship with God. And that's where his death came, one of the greatest gifts he ever gave me, because that cracked open my door to develop my relationship with God.
Because
he would say to me, have you no faith, Jilby? What's wrong with you? Do you not believe? And it wasn't that I didn't believe per se. It was more along the lines of everything has kind of fallen into place for me thus far. It's just kind of like taken, I'm sorry to admit, but taken for granted. I had a killer job. I worked for an amazing family and an amazing company. I had everything I could ever imagine. We had this great life. I was healthy. I still am healthy. So my parents are alive. You know what I mean? I had everything. Mm-hmm. This was my first massive dealing with death, as well as tragedy, because there were five other families involved in this accident. It was a nightmare. I mean, traffic had been stopped forever. And bless everyone involved, no one else was as injured as he was. Everyone else was able to walk away. He unfortunately did lose his life immediately. And for that, I have great peace that he did not suffer in any sense of the way. And ironically enough, the truck driver that cut him off was the man who stayed with him until he passed away.
Oh, wow. Wow. So when you have this kind of, you know, life-shattering, earth-shattering blow, and everything that, you know, in an instant, the world was completely different. Everything that you believed, everything that you thought, as you said so beautifully, that, you know, you had this plan, and it makes sense that you would, because that's what we human beings do. You know, when we come back, I want to speak with you about how you have found your way back, what has helped you along the way. And this will be a great place, friends, for you to listen closely to find encouragement around your own story, and also to help those that you know that have had these types of losses. Hold on, stay with us. We'll be back.
I'm looking for a certain kind of woman, and I think you know her. She's an entrepreneur that is highly connected, successful, significant in her own industry, and considered the go-to woman in her community. She's received so much from so many women in business, she's ready to give back to others on their journey, lifting as she climbs. Hi, this is Sandra Yancey, and I'm the founder and CEO of eWomen Network. I'm looking to connect with the woman I've just described who lives in your community so that we might have a conversation about how eWomen Network's proven success system can provide her a platform to elevate her success and ability to support women in business. Our international community of managing directors are influencing the speed of success for women in business around the world. If that sounds like something that you want to be part of, or know someone we should talk with, send an email to managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com. That's managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com, and let's start the conversation.
Friends of eWomen Network, I want to share with you two cutting-edge and soul-stirring books by author and visionary Chris Saadi. Both are highly recommended by a host of spiritual teachers such as Kate Sheehan Roach and Andrew Harvey. These books focus on the emergence of an evolutionary spiritual understanding, that is, the importance and the power of living authentically, freeing our authentic, unique self, and pursuing our calling from our authentic passion to serve freedom, peace, justice, and inclusion. These two books are Second Wave Spirituality and Prayers for Peace and Justice by Chris Saadi, S-A-A-D-E. Saade is on Amazon.com and theolivebranchcenter.net.
Welcome back to Finding Hope. I am your host, Counselor Mandy Bird. Today I'm speaking with a powerful woman named Jill Angelo. Jill's been sharing her story about one of the great heartbreaks in her life, the sudden, unexpected car accident of her fiancé. And we were speaking about how Jill, like all of us, had a plan. And then life came along and boom, that plan suddenly in an instant was shattered. So Jill, what, I know there have been many things and I know it's been a journey, but what did you do? What were some of the things that helped you, you know, move through this type of pain?
The first thing that I did was I got myself help, because I think that at that point, we all want to be stoic and we all want to think that we can do it, but you're in a place and experiencing something you've never experienced before.
Yeah.
And while family, friends are helpful, they're not trained professionals. And I remember, I'm new to my community, so I go to my church and I get a priest. I say, I want to see a priest. I need to see a priest. And the priest sits down with me. And the priest's response to me at that moment was, you have to remember that evil occurs. And I remember sitting there with such a perplexed thought going, yeah, you know, this isn't what I was looking for here. This was really not what I wanted you to say to me. I wanted you to give me something like, yeah, that angel that's over your shoulder, something that had comfort in it.
Right.
Not really in a way solidifying exactly what I thought, because, and you know far better than I with counseling people in grief, you're winging yourself through those cycles all the time. And, you know, you're in that despair moment, and then in a blink of an eye, you're in anger and rage, and then you're in denial. And then sometimes you think that you're experiencing all three in 30 seconds, and it's like, which one do I focus on? So from there, I got the world's best psychiatrist that I even say in my book, he saved my life. Because even at that point, not that I would have committed suicide, there were moments when I honestly thought about it, because this was just far too painful to even bear.
Yeah.
And talking to him was probably the very best first step I had made. And as many can attest to, things start to fall in place, right? And you start to see God in the details and the divine guidance that's coming through. And you pick up the phone and the psychiatrist answers the phone and goes, I have a cancellation in an hour and a half. Can you come? And then you go and then you connect with this person right away. And I could have been on medication. I opted not to go on medication. And I decided to go through the tunnel of rawness right then and there. And I realized that for some, they cannot. I was determined to, and I'm glad that I made that choice then, because I was too worried that 6 months up the road or 8 months up the road, I would not have progressed, because I'm such a go-getter and I'm, you know, I want to take everything on. So why wouldn't I have wanted to take on grief? Well, little did I know. So if I could have slept on this man's floors, I promise you I would have.
Right.
I would have. It was the safest place you could be, is to be with someone who looks at you and go, that's absolutely right. You are feeling this. It's normal.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. Somebody that truly understands the process. I mean, I it's one of the things that I say when I meet people for the first time who contact me, that, you know, I want you to know I am not afraid of your pain. And the relief, you know, that people feel. I mean, I had one young widow say to me, you know, that was like a soothing medicine to hear that, because everywhere I turned, I felt afraid of my grief, and everyone around me who loved me felt afraid of my grief for me. So you had that experience. So the first thing that you did is you got yourself help. And I think that I love that you are saying that so clearly, that, you know, you've reached out for help in all different types of ways and forms. So what is one of the ideas or tools or techniques that you learned that you really feel like helped you move through the intensity of the pain of the loss?
that every feeling I had was okay.
Yeah.
And that I could have it. And that when I was in his office, it didn't matter how loud I screamed or how hard I cried to the point of convulsing or the anger that I felt that I didn't get to say this, this, or this before it all happened or after it happened, that everything I had was justified and I was safe there. Because some of those feelings, I wouldn't have felt comfortable in front of my parents because my parents really didn't know how to console me. You know, they have each other still.
Yeah.
Bless their heart. So how do you console someone who doesn't necessarily, and I'll say this, how do you console someone who doesn't necessarily know how you feel? Now, that said, I had to get through all of my stages of grief to understand that grief is grief. And while we're in it, we think that no one else is in that pain. But I'm not looking to minimize it, and I know you're going to say it far more eloquently than I will, but there's that point where whether it was your mother or my fiance, we all went through those seven stages, and they suck.
Yeah.
And thank God to get through them, because holy cow, the person you come out on the other side is so full, that mosaic that you become because your heart's been broken. And I had my therapist say to me, you know, Jill, your heart is actually stronger for being broken. And I looked at him going, you've got to be crazy. And he's like, no, girl, it really is.
Right.
And it's true. So I have to say that I am so proud to be what has come of me as a result of such a massive tragedy. It'd be hard to say I'd do it all again because I would not want anyone to lose their life as a result of it.
Sure.
You know what I mean? That experience of becoming this person through that, and oh my goodness, like you said, all the other parts of the journey that you go through.
Yeah.
I like me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, amen, amen. That's where you want to be. You want to be when you move through that type of massive pain and loss. That's what I'm so passionate about, is helping people see on the other side that there is another side. I mean, you will always feel that sorrow and the sadness, and we can rebuild our lives. And what you said about learning that all of your feelings were good, they were okay, they were understandable, they made sense, they were appropriate, that's literally step one of the seven steps of grief and hope, that is affirm your grief. And that piece alone, and why Christati and I made that the very first step, is because when we fight our feelings all the time, we are constantly in a civil war with our own authentic being. So developing, if all you get out of listening to the episodes of Finding Hope is welcome the truth of your own feelings, learn to be with them, learn to support your feelings, learn to be honest with yourself and get support for those feelings, your life will shift and you will feel empowered and you'll get to know your own self better to be able to say what Jill's saying, which is, I like me. I like me. I've gone through this whole thing. You know, I was sitting with my very dearest friend, Tammy Starling, over the weekend. She was here visiting from Nashville. We were doing a training, actually, with Chris Saadi and doing leadership training. And Tammy said that, and she is, you know, 26, 27 years out from her loss of her husband dying in a car accident. And to be able to say, you know, of course, the same thing, I would never wish, you know, the death of Milton. And I can tell you, I'm so deeply grateful for what I've learned and who I've become. And that's what I hear you saying around your story. What an encouraging lighthouse you are for people that hear your story and read your book and find to know that we all can move there. We just have to make sure that we get support and take care of ourselves, and we don't turn on ourselves along the way. Wow. So moving through your story, when did you begin to realize, like, okay, I can do this. I can move through this.
Part of it was that, in a sense, I had to, I guess. Well, we can look at it as from a choice perspective. But remember, I had a house now that was partially gutted. So in order to live, I had to fix my house. I couldn't even sell it the way that it was.
Yeah.
So, and where are you going with grief, right? Because that was one of the, that was the next thing that you learn really quick. No matter where you go, it's right there. It's a monkey on your back. It's in that backpack and it can either get bigger or smaller. So I really went inside, and I mean inside literally, figuratively, emotionally, mentally, by redoing this house and it made it a home. And I did all these beautiful sacred moments and ideas and concepts, and it had crystals in the paint and prayers in the paint before I painted the room, and the intentions that I set for each room, because I wanted to heal from the inside out, not just his grief, but any other baggage I might have been carrying that I wasn't aware I was still carrying until the grief of him knocked that all open again, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So you set, so you tackled one of the ways you moved through this grief immediately is you said, okay, I've got to live in this house right now. And I'm, I mean, that must have been so continually paradoxical around being filled with ideas of what the two of you would have done together and the dreams and hopes and wishes you had. And then the part of you that was saying, okay, I'm still living. I've got to keep moving. I mean, wow. And so, friends, the name of Jill's book is Sacred Space. So your book was truly born out of all of your life experiences and out of the death of your fiancé. When we come back, we're going to speak about Jill's passion around creating sacred space. Stay with us. We'll be back.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
The 7 steps of grief and hope can be found at therespite.org on the Hope Is Now page. This is a video series that I had the honor and privilege of co-creating with my dear friend and colleague, Chris Saadi. This model, the model of heart-centered grief, is designed in 7 coaching sessions where you can stream or watch the DVD videos where Chris and I are coaching you through these incredibly powerful 7 steps to give you hope, and their practical ideas, creative ideas, to help you move through your grief journey in an inspired way, in a way with great dignity, and to support you through this difficult time in your life. Whatever your loss is, friend, the model of heart-centered grief is designed to empower you and encourage you on your journey.
Welcome back to Finding Hope. I'm your host, Counselor Mandy Berg. Today, I'm speaking with Jill Angelo. Jill, I'd love to hear about how you, you know, what gave you this idea to write Sacred Space, and just to give you an opportunity to share with our listening friends about your work and about this book.
In wanting desperately to heal and not being completely sure of exactly what it was that I was healing, I just knew I needed to feel better and wanted to feel better. That was the quest. As I was sharing before, I wanted to go within. And that was even within the house, because there was really nowhere for me that I wanted to be or to go. Work, while I was highly supported by the people that I worked with, was no longer the same. I was morphing into a different person. And, you know, shout out to all the people that I had worked with then for tolerating and putting up with me, and the moments where it was unbearable that I would lock myself in a bathroom because I was worried I went back too soon. But when is too soon, right? Pain is pain. So I really started to focus on it from home, and I had to rebuild this house. So it became, what textures made me feel good? What did I feel nurtured by? Was I nurtured by velvet, or did I feel more nurtured by polar fleece? Like, it's cold outside right now. I'm in Chicago, so it's cold here. So now I want my polar fleece sweatsuits and that warm, fuzzy feeling. And those were the things that I started to feel were really beneficial to get me back in my own stride. My senses, for some reason, and I'm sure this happens with many, my senses seem to have been on a even higher level. Yeah. My sense of touch was greater. My sense of smell was greater. Things that didn't bother me before now suddenly did. And I was really paying serious attention to how that all affected me and how I could encompass all that to build what I refer to as my sacred space that helped me heal. And it was, it took 7 years worth of what I did to create the house that I created into a home. And it eased so much. And when I would come home, that was the only place I wanted to be, because every piece in that place was an expression of who I was and became.
Wow.
None of it was, well, I want to duplicate this magazine photo of, I don't know who this is. It was every photo that hung on the wall was something that I took or had a moment for me in my life or a moment with him in our lives. Mm. Every texture I wanted in that space. There wasn't really much that I had in there that wasn't invited. And that,
that's powerful.
When you look at your home from that perspective, that's the haven, right? That's, we're building a foundation, and when you buy a new home, well, it's really a house before it becomes a home, that safe haven is where you're building your hopes, your dreams, your wishes. Even if you got divorced and moved, you have new hopes and dreams.
Yeah.
So you're always carrying that with you. You're going to raise children in there. Well, instead of raising children, I raised animals.
Yeah.
And that brought me tremendous love and hope. So it was through that all this morphed. And I couldn't be more grateful.
Oh, wow. Wow. That touches me so deeply. I so relate to your work and your book. It means so much to me because I am a very visual person. And having the things around me that are beautiful to me, I can tell you that as a little girl and the amount of emotional pain that I was in. I was, you know, always, I mean, I was born into the world a deeply feeling, big hearted being. And so one of the ways that I coped with all the change and my parents' divorce was creating, I mean, my bedroom was my place to create my nest, you know, my safe place, my place that would nurture my spirit. And I continued that. And I so resonate with your teaching around, you know, that you chose the things that nurtured you and that, you know, it all adds up one by one by one. All of these things add up to our transforming our lives and bringing healing into our lives. And it's such a joy to hear you speak about it so passionately, because those, it's to take so seriously that the things we place in our surrounding, you know, our bedroom, our home, our kitchen, that to place the things that feed your soul, to invest in yourself, because what you're doing is communicating to your psyche, I love you. I love you. You may be hurting like hell, and I love you. You know, it was like with little symbols of hope that kept you moving, kept you going. And now you're so beautifully offering that to others. So I just imagine you know, isn't it incredible the hope and the new beginning that can come out of it? I mean, when you walked into the hospital and there were so many people there to greet you, you had no idea that all these years later you would be using those experiences to give back and help others.
No, I did not. I did not. And you know, as a side note, I'm so glad that God had a better direction for me with my plans, because I could have never envisioned the life that I have now then.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
Never.
That unknowing
and that peace inside that says, just run with this, just trust this.
Mm-hmm.
And you do, and you see what comes. Holy cow. It's so amazing.
That's so incredible. I mean, I adore your love of animals. I mean, will you share with our friends? I mean, just, I love it when you, I mean, I know Jill through a training that we did together and in our connection with our dear friend, Andrew Harvey. And so I see Jill's Facebook feed and it is full of dogs. It is so precious to me that when I took my daughter Tess to go get our first dog together, I tagged Jill so Jill can see we got a dog. You know, so tell us about that love and I mean how that has helped you in your healing also.
Well, one of the things in growing up in starting to work was that usually we wind up when we're first in high school and you get your first job, you're either in retail or you're in some kind of restaurant, fast food, and it becomes a service industry. And I never realized how much I loved to have been in service. I didn't. And as you grow, obviously you learn those pieces and parts of yourself. And my passion has always been for animals, and I've always rescued and fostered. I took it a step further in the last couple of years, and I actually now work part-time at a local animal shelter. And we see heartache and happiness in the same moment in a different way, but similarly to grief, because you see the 10-year-old dog get relinquished because they've got a brand new puppy. Mm-hmm. And then you see the 12-year-old get adopted and go out the door. And so you're riding that wave of highs and lows every day. That to see these creatures need to have a voice. And that's what I now am working to dedicate as much of myself to, is to be a voice and a champion. And, of course, to adopt as many of them or foster as many of them as I can. So currently we have, and I say currently, we have 8 dogs at our house, 1 cat. We're looking to move. My goal, I hope you're listening and support this one, God, but you are sending me all the signs to prove is that I will have some form of animal sanctuary. Instead of telling God, I'm trusting because God is laying out this path that seems to be showing me that this is exactly what is going to occur. Mm. And I can't talk enough about the joy. And they live in a sacred space themselves because I've created a sacred space and they live in it. So that's one thing that we have to be mindful of, is that if we smoke, our children smoke, our spouse smoke, our animals smoke. If we're drinkers, everybody suffers that too. So if you're living in a sacred spaced environment, your animals are living in that environment as well. Yeah. So that's one of the things I'm working very hard to help create in our home, because you can imagine a pack of 8, they all get along really well, and the cat seems to think he's a dog also. So we're very blessed. And in addition to that, my other great joy is that Andrew Harvey and I do tours to Timbavati, South Africa with Linda Tucker and the Global White Lion Protection Trust. And we take people down there on sacred activism, spiritual journeys, and help with lion conservation and help fundraise to help sustain the sanctuary where these lions live. And they are by far the most beautiful, majestic creatures. And I'm going back for my 6th time in March now, and that, talk about joy. I mean, that's joy on overload, because you're literally in the middle of nowhere being awoken at 2:30 in the morning by a pride of lions roaring, and you can feel those vibrations of their roars go through your body. Mm-hmm. And I've had it referred to as orgasmic, and in its own right, it really is. It's absolutely amazing.
Wow.
And who would have thought that this would be my life now?
Yeah, right. I mean, see, that is the incredible mystery of how the divine works in our lives through our losses if we keep our hearts open, which is step 2 of the model, actually. And if we are willing to get the help that we deserve, if we're willing to get the support that we deserve. And it's so amazing to me to hear, I mean, when you speak about caring for these animals, not only the white lions, but every day working at the animal shelter, because I'm sure, I mean, being the accomplished woman that you are in business, I'm sure that there are some people that look at you kind of half-cocked like, girl, what you doing working part-time at the animal shelter? You know, and that for you, your passion just flows out of that. And it, mm-hmm. and what I hear when you speak about it is how much joy it brings you. And mm-hmm. it's such a great tangible example of when difficult things and earth-shattering things occur in our lives, to hold on and to hold tight, because we will be led to the things that bring us great joy. And your story is such a great example of that. When we come back from break, we're going to speak more with Jill about her passion, her work, and about the White Lion. Stay with us. We'll be back.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is, you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who have been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called Accelerated Networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. And once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
Counselor Mandy would like to offer you a free gift. As you've heard on her show, Finding Hope, she and Chris Saadi co-created the 7 Steps of Grief and Hope. She would like for you to have a free recording that includes an introduction to the 7 Steps and takes a deep dive into Step 4, Paradox. In this recording, Chris and Mandy talk about how important it is to honor the grief journey. After listening to this recording, you will understand the importance of viewing your grief paradoxically, feel supported that you're not alone, and be inspired about how your grief can help others. To download this free recording, visit therespite.org. Just scroll down on the homepage to where it says, Hear about the transformational 7 Steps of Grief and Hope, and click the Get Access button. It's that easy. Mandy's passion in life is helping people see that the losses in their life have meaning. We hope you'll accept this free gift from her. Again, visit therespite.org to get your free recording.
Welcome back to Finding Hope. I'm your host, Counselor Mandy Bird. We're speaking with Jill Angelo today. Jill, I'm so touched by your passion for the dog family you've created, for this vision of a sanctuary that you have in your heart, and for your work with the White Lions. And I would just love for our listeners to know a little bit more about the White Lions, and then I definitely want us to speak more about sacred space.
Okay. Linda Tucker has an extraordinary story of her own. So for those who want to Google her, it's Linda Tucker and it's whitelions.org to learn more about the trust itself. Through Andrew, we went down there, oh goodness, I think in 2009, we went down there. And we were in Timbavati, South Africa, and we stay in rindavels, which are little clay huts with thatched roofs. And we stay at what's referred to as Camp Unicorn. And it's a small, small little tiny bullseye piece of this majestically beautiful property where these white lions live. And Linda has dedicated her life to saving these lions because there's so many lions in captivity, which are in captivity to be trophy hunted. Hung on the wall, stuffed, kept in your living room. However, it's quite a monetary industry down there. And our goal is to bring people to learn about the lions, have this incredible experience of being on property with them where they're in a sanctuary safe versus some of those beautiful game reserves that people stay in that they don't know are actual hunting camps. And so to have this experience and to be on such sacred land and then to be with these majestic creatures, there's 3 different prides. And Andrew and I have been able to see these prides expand and grow, and baby's been born, and we bring these great tours. So we actually have a tour coming up, and we're going to have two in 2017. And it's just one more thing that it's one of those gifts that God delivered, and I said yes.
Wow. Well, I want to say, I mean, there are so many animal lovers that are part of eWomen Network and who love the earth, and it's so inspiring to what you're doing. And to find out more, please go check out Linda Tucker and the work that she's doing. It's amazing. I mean, these animals are really considered to be, you know, sacred messengers.
Correct.
They're absolutely stunning. And so do you have, I know you could share for hours about what you've learned from this experience with the lions. And when you look back on your life, just as you said, can you believe this is my life? Can you believe this is what I'm doing? So your book, Sacred Space, is so special because it's so warm. It's so user-friendly. I mean, anyone, whether you think you have a decorating bone in your body, because it's not about decorating. It's about creating a space that nurtures your soul. I'd love for you to share what this book means to you, Jill.
It's something that I am honored to put out in the world now. I will thank Andrew Harvey here, because from the moment that I met Andrew, he had told me, when I told him about Sacred Space back in 2008, he's like, darling, you need to write a book. And I didn't. And then he would tell me almost weekly since 2008, darling, you need to write a book. And then finally I sat down and started to write it. And with the help of some friends and direction, it became. And I had first self-published it, and then a publisher showed interest, and now I'm beyond delighted to say that I am a published author, which is an amazing feeling. And it has a stunning cover. And it my goal is to help the reader create that sacred space with little to no money at all, because when you start to look around the room at the items that are there, if I were there as your guide, I would be asking you, tell me the story behind this piece. What does this lamp mean to you? What does this candle holder mean to you? Why is it there? And then when you share your joy and I see you get excited about it, that's one thing. But I've also been in homes where there's that obligation. This was Grandma so-and-so's. I have to have this. Don't you understand? It's an heirloom. But there's such animosity. There's anger behind it. There's dread. There's fear. And I understand that people feel that they need to keep those items for holidays. They have to show them, or you don't understand if my mom comes and my mom doesn't see this. Yeah. And I do understand. But go buy a beautiful box and put that piece in the box and let it stay in the box until mom's coming. And then put it out and go, Mom, look how great this looks. And then just put it away. And it's okay to do that because this is your sacred space. Yeah. Your mom has her own sacred space. And I don't want sacred to intimidate anyone, because I use that word because for me it truly is holy. For some on that journey, as you transition through, maybe you'll look at it as valuable, and as you learn and you learn to appreciate yourself and look yourself in the mirror and go, hey, you know what, I am sacred, because that's how I open my workshops. I make you say I am sacred 3 times. And the first time people squirm in their chairs because they're hesitant to say it. But by the third one, they're saying it with firm, full breath, shoulders back, I am. And that's the other goal, because you have to find the sacred in everything, first beginning with yourself.
Yes, that is so empowering. I love it. I mean, for each chapter, as many of us are, I adore powerful words and quotes. And at each beginning of each chapter, the quotes that you've chosen to go along with the chapter fit so beautifully. And because, you know, my space that I've created has nurtured me so much, I just love this book. I love what you're teaching, what you're saying, and because of my great passion of supporting people around their grief stories, I adore that this came out of such a painful, again, earth-shattering time in your life. And that, friends, I mean, you know, as you're listening and hearing Jill's story, to be thinking about how can you bring meaning to your own life, your own space, by honoring your loss. Because mm-hmm. that's what you did in the process of redoing your home. I mean, you were doing it for your own life, for your present, for your future, and you were also honoring your beloved who had died. You know,
that's right.
you were, it's like, I'm, you know, one of the widows that I've worked with in the years past, you know, she's this incredible kind of strong, you know, brassy woman. She cusses like a parrot. I love her dearly. And she's like, I'm not the one who died. I'm still living. I have to keep going. I have to find ways to honor him and honor my life. And that is Sacred Space was born out of that and your mm-hmm. work. Mm-hmm. And that brings such incredible meaning. And that for you, friends, you may not feel called to write a book, but you may feel that you want to gather girlfriends together that have suffered losses and take the time to tell your stories. Or you want to put together a celebration to celebrate, wow, we're still breathing. We're still here. We made it. You know, whatever it is that your heart needs, listen and follow that and trust it. Because, Jill, that's clearly what you have done. And it's been messy, hasn't it?
Very. And I will let, you know, side note, I have gotten married. I just recently got married last year to an incredible man who supports all of what I've become, mm-hmm. 8 dogs sleeping on the bed, more dogs in the future. I've got 2 great stepchildren. And again, I wouldn't have any of this if I didn't say yes back then.
Yeah, yeah. If you didn't, if you had closed up your heart and became embittered, you very well could still be living, but living connected to what could have been, as opposed to let me, you know, transform what has occurred and bring it with me. Let me bring
Correct.
All that love with me. And congratulations on,
thank
on
you.
Your, yes, yes. So,
you too.
So wonderful. Thank you. So what is one thing that you want people to know that you meet or who are listening who really feel stuck and finding meaning in their lives? What would your wisdom be for them?
My first wisdom would be to make sure that they're reaching out for the appropriate help.
Yeah.
The second would be to make sure that they are honoring themselves and realize how sacred they are. That if there's any comfort in knowing that they're not alone in this place of grief, they're not.
Yeah.
Because we are all surrounded by someone who has gone through it or is in the stages of going through it. And I've come to realize that those that are more than willing to open their hearts to help those that are going through, without a doubt. So know that. While it is a private journey, don't be afraid to share it. And to really walk into the home that's yours, and ask yourself, how does this place nurture me? How can I make it more nurturing? What can I do that would be even more beneficial to me, whether it's in a healing process or even in a celebratory process? Look around at all the items that you have inside of your home. Do they make you happy? Do they bring you joy? Can you tell me the story? If you have a bowl of seashells, do you have those seashells because you are on a trip and you pick those seashells up? And they have a memory behind them, or did you buy them in a bag at a store?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's different energy in how all that works. And that's what's so important, is that in building that sacred space, that each item is what's speaking to you and will let you know that. So if you're going to hang art on your wall, are you buying stock art? Or could you get the art because, I mean, everybody's got iPhones now with these incredible cameras. Photograph that sunset. Don't buy a stock one. Photograph one that you witnessed that overwhelmed you with beauty. Hang that on the wall. Those are the things that help create that sacred environment. Be aware of your colors. You know, what colors speak to you? What colors bring you joy? Are you wearing those to work to help even build a happier environment for you at your workspace?
Mm-hmm.
What does it do? Do an inventory. And more than anything, if you have clutter, because that's the first thing you can do to open up your energy, and all of us will clear out a drawer and see what happens. And then move to a closet or move to an entire room. Do what you need to get what you don't need out. But whatever you choose not to keep, thank it, bless it, so that when it moves on, because energy travels.
Wow.
And so if you don't think it does, here's one example. While I was planning my wedding, which we did a very, very simple, simple wedding, because what mattered most to me was the commitment, not the hoopla.
Mm-hmm.
Someone said to me, why don't you just get a dress from a consignment store? And I immediately froze and thought, no, because if I were to look at that, why do most women give up their wedding gowns? Because they got divorced or he may have passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Not all divorces end well. So that energy would have traveled with that gown.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to put that energy on me on a day that had such a sacred moment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very beneficial that the items that you do choose not to have, thank it for what it's given you. Because every article of clothing, it could have been, well, these are the jeans I met my husband in. This was my favorite shirt. This was the shirt that I got the $1 million deal. If you're not that person anymore, I have friends who have had numerous children, you're not going to fit in your skinny jeans. You're more beautiful now than you were when we were in our 20s, right? So don't torture yourself. Get rid of them.
Right.
Pass them on.
I love it. I love
right?
it.
Right? I mean, you are more beautiful. You have a woman's body. You bore all these beautiful children.
Mm.
Those size twos don't matter anymore.
Right.
Look what
I
you've
love
got.
It. So what you're really encouraging people to do is to be intentional around what is in their world and to love themselves in it.
That's right.
To be intentional and to love yourself. What you're teaching about is loving ourselves by what we put in our space. Will you share the website where people can find your book?
Sure. Thank you. It's jillangelo.com. You can find Sacred Space, articles on Sacred Space. Happy to help. The courses I'm teaching, I'm excited. It's an amazing year ahead.
Oh, yes. I'm so excited for you. Oh, it's awesome. Friends, check out Jill's work. Go to Chicago and train with her. She's an amazing spirit. Thank you so much for being with us today. It was a joy to
speak
with you, powerful woman. Stay with us. Remember to come back to Finding Hope. We'll be with you next week. Take good care. Bye-bye.
Look ahead to the distant horizon. See the phoenix on.